You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
It's great to learn new things, but at school, you're sometimes so stuck in a, you must learn this to pass the exam. It doesn't matter if you don't really understand it. Just remember the facts and then write them down in a few months' time. But actually, just learning new things is brilliant. And the same with books.
But before all of that... Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode. Now, it's Friday afternoon. I should have a gin. I don't have a gin because I've got to go and pick the kids up. So I am relying heavily on the two gentlemen who are sitting here looking at me surrounded by pandas to entertain us. Jen, give us an intro. Tell us who we're talking to.
Hi, Wendy. Yes, this week we have not just one, but two fantastic guests. Authors, broadcasters, talented and funny guys. Greg James is a radio and television presenter, comedian, and author. He's host of the BBC One Breakfast Show, does the Teach Me a Lesson podcast with his wife, Bella Mackey, and the two live in North London with their dog, Barney. Also with us, Chris Smith, lovingly known as Chris Smith with the News. He's been Greg's friend and sidekick for years. He also lives in North London with his family and a cat named Mabel. Together, the pair co-author children's books, and we're here today to talk to them about their most recent one, Super Ghost. So welcome, gents.
Thanks for the intro, Jen.
Great intros.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
I didn't know you were a comedian as well, Greg.
Well, I have a lot to prove in the next 40 minutes.
You do. We've got to be as entertaining as gin.
Yes.
Basically.
We can do that.
Yeah, of course we can.
Also, no pressure.
Why don't you send a taxi to pick up your children from school and say, Mummy's had a fall and needs to lie down for a bit?
I mean, in the Victorian times, which is that Mummy has the vapors. Mummy will simply be lying in a darkened room for a little while because she can't deal with the world for now.
Do you know what? It's sorely tempting.
Well, thanks for having us on. We've never done this before, but we're pleased to do it now.
So I want the lowdown on Super Ghost, please. You wrote your first book, Kid Normal, in 2017, I think. And I personally love Mr. Flash and the fact he calls kids useless maggots because I call my kids maggots. So it's kind of, I think I stole it from you. What inspired you to write Super Ghost and give us a bit of blurb, please?
Just quickly. I'm amazed and so pleased you brought up Mr. Flash because he is my favourite character I think we've maybe ever created because he is an amalgamation of all the PE teachers that we've ever been taught PE by or shouted at or loosely and jokingly bullied by. But yeah, we've loved characters like that who are just quite mean but also quite stupid.
Yeah, and we discover more about Mr. Flash as the Kid Normal series goes on and discover he's kind of a tragic character. But anyway, Super Ghost is, as you say, our new book, and you can kind of get quite a lot of it from the title. I think it's about a superhero called Doctor Extraordinary, but there is a twist in the tale because he dies right at the beginning of the book. So we thought rather than dramatically kill off a character at the end, as some authors have done, we'll turn that on its head and we'll dramatically kill off a character right, and not even in chapter one, in the prologue.
Yeah. Dead in the prologue. That's gutting.
You're a little bit stuffed if you're one of those people who skips over the prologue.
Yeah,
Who's skipping over the prologue?
Who skips over prologues? What kind of psychopaths do that?
Well, more to the point, when you get the film rights for this, you're not going to get anyone decent to play him because they'll be dead in the prologue.
Well, no, because...
It's a dream part.
Yeah, it's a dream part.
Yeah.
Because he comes back, you see, because in chapter... We've had the prologue, the very dramatic prologue. Doctor Extraordinary gets blown up inside a giant robot with his nemesis, Captain Chaos. They've both been exploded. But then we leap to chapter one and we meet Sonny, who is Doctor Extraordinary's 11-year-old number one fan, who discovers that he's the only person that can see the ghost of the superhero and the only person that can hear him. So it's all about, you know, sort of Sonny dealing with the fact that his hero is not there anymore and the superhero dealing with the fact that he's now a ghost. Even though he's got super strength, he can't touch anything.
It's interesting you bring that up, though, because I was just thinking about some films where they're clearly really low budget, but they get budget for one day for a really famous actor. And maybe what we should have done is really killed him off, had the funeral in chapter one, and then gone, right, well, we had a day with Idris Elba or something. and then it's like a cast of nobodies. But yeah, he is present throughout the whole story. And I'm so pleased we finally killed off a character because I've been trying to kill one off for five books. And in the sixth one, Chris said, yeah, okay, let's do it.
It's quite hard to do in a kid's book is to kill off a character.
You know, as writers, they always say kill your darlings, but you've just been trying to kind of kill your characters.
Yeah, Greg's been he's been going on, as he said, for a few books time going like, we should kill a character. It's really dramatic.
Yeah.
So when we came to write this book, I said, OK, we will. But right at the beginning. And we sort of, as you say, it's a slightly, you know, people sometimes would shy away, I think, from dealing with that subject for kids. But we do it with a lot of silliness and a lot of our trademark sort of, you know, talking them through it. So we come in right in the prologue and say, you know, we've got to get this out of the way first, guys. It's a book about a ghost. So something really sad has got to happen in chapter one, but we'll be with you all the way through. It's going to be lots of silliness on the way. So let's kind of get it over with. Let's have the dramatic prologue.
We like breaking the fourth wall with the books like we do on the radio and like radio does, you know, all the time, really. But that's the idea of being with the readers while there's a dramatic story going on and you can break out of it and then just have a pause and a breather and just say,
and
look,
have a chat and then
and
go
have a
back.
Chat. Yeah. Say, it's going to be fine. Like, don't worry about it. Like death happens and that kind of thing. But it'll be all right in the end type thing. We really love the idea of sort of holding the kids' hands throughout the story. It adds an extra dimension to it as well, I think.
I was going to say that, exactly that about breaking the fourth wall. You have that, you have kind of onomatopoeic sound effect words, just the voice itself. Reading Super Ghost, it's almost like either listening to a story, like with the storyteller right there, or watching a film rather than reading words on a page. Obviously, that was deliberate, but was it as much fun to write as it is to read?
Mm, it really was, yeah, because we start a lot of the characters are born from a voice or just a thing or a name. So we will just sit in a room and workshop's probably too grand a word, but we'll just...
Don't call it workshopping. It makes us sound like we really think these things through.
No, okay, well, we do workshop, but we just say, okay, who's the baddie? Who do we want it to be? And then we'll start with a voice. And then, like, Nectar was one of our baddies in the first book. And Nectar was sort of a little bit of a Rick Mayall voice, I think, wasn't it? It was supposed to be a bit silly like this. And he talks with a little bit of a speech impediment like that because he's a wasp, but he's half man and half wasp and he's a bit stupid. So we just come up with a voice like that. And then suddenly you get the character from that voice. You go, oh, I totally get him. He sounds all waspy and frantic, but also a bit stupid. So, yeah, Doctor Extraordinary started initially, I guess, from a character we had in Kid Normal called Mr. Superman, who was a sort of, a washed up superhero, but kind of world weary and kind of bored with it and just another day in the office kind of thing, like a smooth kind of character like that who might be hosting, might be doing the rounds and like hosting award shows and stuff. He's just like...
An after dinner speaker.
And then that's when I met Sophie, my wife, my first wife, and like that kind of person. So that's who Dr. Extraordinary is.
He's actually really annoyed in the first chapter because when he's trapped inside the giant robot that's about to explode, complains like, I've got a reception at the town hall tonight. The mayor's coming, for goodness sake.
So this question you kind of answered a little bit, but you spent your time on the radio together talking in silly voices and coming up with completely batshit creations for things. I presume the writing process is vaguely similar. It's you two being idiots in a room together and producing a book.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Once there's a framework, once there is, and we're really good at essentially having, well, coming up with the story and the basic beginning, middle and end, but also having chapter headings.
You have to say that because you're sat in Penguin's offices. You're just being professional so they know that you do it properly, really.
We have to have a couple of weeks where we do it properly and we come up with chapter headings and then we fill it in, and that's when the real fun starts.
We are suckers for a good chapter title, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. We like, so we sometimes will, as you sort of block out a film, you know, in like storyboard, we'll often sort of write the titles of the chapters. Like in the Great Dream Robbery, which is the book before this, it was all about kids going into dreams and trying to rescue Maya, the lead character's dad, who was trapped in a nightmare. And it was basically also, we could use the chapter title Waking Dad.
Yes.
Which we just worked towards, basically, which we were inordinately proud of.
But in terms of what we did on the radio, and what I still do now, is you have to have some sort of framework. Otherwise, it is just a mess. So, but as long as you've got a strong enough framework to then mess around within it, then you have space to have fun. And actually, you have more fun and you can be more ridiculous because you've always got a a sort of parameter to work within. So that's why the chapter headings are good, because we can go off and just go, here's a mad bit. But then you reread it, or our amazing editor, Carmen, will reread it and go, yeah, you didn't need the extra 500 words at the end of that one. So just squeeze it back in.
Well, speaking about writing, I wanted to ask about writing for this particular age group. Now, the book is for kind of the 8 to 12-year-old range. It's an interesting age with kids, right? Because you're moving from being a child to being a tween and teen.
It's a really important time, because it's when you really start to lose yourself in a story. Mm. But also, you know, speaking as a parent, it's sometimes the time when kids start to lose their reading as well, because you lose that sort of, you lose that bedtime moment. You know, when they're little, you can sit and read a bedtime story with them and it's great and they love that. And when they go off and read on their own, it's, you know, you do get really lost in a story, but also it's when some kids start to just lose that habit and it's really easy to lose. So we were really passionate about writing, you know, what are hopefully kind of quite grabby stories for that age group. And also what we're really strong on, you know, we try to be really strong on is having a story that a grown-up will enjoy as well, and try and keep that sharing a story together moment going for as long as possible, you know, so that even when the kids are sort of, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, they will, you know, we'd really love it if the parents were like, I'll come and read a chapter with you, you know, at night as well. So there's plenty of jokes in there for the grown-ups, pop culture references that will hopefully keep the grown-ups entertained as well. So what we would really love is, what we do love is when people come to the signings and say, you know, we're reading the story together. Mm. So the longer you can keep that going, the better, I think.
That age group are, in general, from 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you tend to be unfiltered with your ideas, and you tend to be a bit more fearless, and you don't worry too much about being cool. And we love that untapped imagination. And that's really great fun for us to revisit. You know, we can go and meet all these kids and get some ideas off, not get, steal ideas from them, but that age group are really fun, because they just, everything is just exciting. So when we go to their school and we do, we make the teacher a baddie, that's like the funnest thing ever, because that is really fun, and it's sort of unbridled, uncynical joy, I guess, which we really like writing about in the books, and we like igniting their imaginations too.
How old are your kids, Chris?
I've just got one. He's 15 now, so he's GCSE year at the moment.
So he's cool now. Yeah. So he won't overthink everything too much.
I've got an 11-year-old, so we're just. But she's already too cool to read books with me.
That's the thing. It's really hard to keep that going, isn't it? And you know, yeah, it's difficult to pick books. I mean, you know, my son, because he's 15, he's, you know, he's reading sort of grown up books now, I suppose. So I'm giving him some of my favourites from when I was a kid. But it's tricky. You've got to work really hard as a parent, I think, to keep that reading habit. Sometimes you feel like you've got to be quite kind of dictatorial about it and go, half an hour before bed, do it. But you know, I think it's something that is worth pushing.
Well, we do have gentlemen like you to thank for that, because I remember being pushed to read books as an 11-year-old, and we certainly didn't at that stage have the sort of books that are funny and that are as good. You know, I remember being told I had to read really serious books, and it was just like, oh, this is dull. Whereas if you can read Kid Normal or one of your books and have a laugh, it's a bit different.
Yeah, I think I was given Puck of Pook's Hill by Rudyard Kipling, and just thinking, like, what the Hades is this?
Yeah,
like, Earth is going on.
I think things have moved on really nicely. There are some amazing books knocking around, some brilliant authors who do tap into the idea of reading for pleasure, because we've all, as you said, we've all been there, and reading can become a chore, because it becomes, anything that becomes work or schoolwork can become unfun quite quickly. And one of the reasons we started up our Teach Me a Lesson podcast is because it's great to learn new things. But at school, you're sometimes so stuck in a, you must learn this to pass the exam. It doesn't matter if you don't really understand it. Just remember the facts and then write them down in a few months' time. But actually just learning new things is brilliant. And the same with books. And on that, we always bang this drum and say, there is a book for everybody. And you just need that one book that makes you go, this is so fun. Oh my God, I had no idea that my brain could go there just from some words. So if it is one of our books, then that's amazing. But there is a book for every kid somewhere that will make them go, oh yeah, I love this. And it doesn't have to be something that's serious or something that's literary or anything that's too, you know, like that. It can be anything, really. So magazines and just comics and anything that makes your imagination whir is fantastic.
So when you do the events in schools, do you play out the, because you do the audiobooks yourselves, don't you, and do all the voices?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Do you do the same in schools? Do you have a bunch of kids dancing around the assembly hall where you're acting out the characters?
We sometimes worry that we've left them too keyed up, and then we just sort of say, we like,
oh, I went off.
Yeah. And we're all like, our live event is basically, you know, getting the kids to help us make up a story. So we really try and fire their imaginations and try and tell them that, you know, creative writing is not a chore. You know, it's something that's brilliant fun. So we make it as silly as possible. We get the teachers involved. You know, as Greg said, sometimes make the teacher into a baddie, which the kids absolutely love. Then get them absolutely fired up so they're completely manic. And then we say, thanks very much for having us. Bye. And then like leave them to carry on with the rest of Friday afternoon. So the teachers probably hate us quite a lot for that. You know, sometimes they've said like, oh, it's great. They wanted to go back to the class and write stories, which is great. But we suspect that what they actually wanted to go is go back to the class and pretend that their teacher is still like half human, half chicken.
Well, that's it. Yeah. By the way, we don't make them into baddies as in like historical. They're not sort of... you know, they're not dictators or sort of racists. You know, we make them into half teacher, half chicken or
silly,
something.
Silly battles, yeah.
Something a bit more plausible. Okay.
Yeah.
So basically you have a bunch of teachers who usually they love it when child authors come to speak to the kids, but they're like, oh no, it's Greg and Chris. I keep hearing it. They're coming again. Oh no.
I think the thing to do if we are coming to your school for a visit, just schedule it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Then you can just send them home and it's the mums and dads that have to reach for the gym. Mm.
There we go, teachers listening. Well, a small aside, my daughter goes to a youth club on a Friday night and they are not daft because there's a tuck shop at the youth club.
Great.
And the tuck shop only sells sweets. So they're allowed to buy the sweets when they get to youth club, but they're not allowed to eat them until they leave.
Oh, amazing.
So at 8:30 tonight, I will have a daughter who is off her tits on flumps.
This is just a racket being run by the youth club.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can buy sweets anywhere, but they're just taking a little backhander, aren't they?
Yeah.
That you buy the sweets and you can't eat them till 8:30, and then there's a bunch of really annoyed parents trying to get their kids to bed and their kids are just running around.
absolutely swivel-eyed off blackjacks coming home.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
Outrageous. Outrageous, baby. I thought you were going to say something like the youth club only sells, the tuck shop only sells vegetables or something.
So you do work with the National Literacy Trust to try and get books to kids around the country, to try and get families reading more. You talked a little bit about the importance of, you know, bedtime stories are not just for when kids are little ones, but kind of continue on through. If you could say one thing to parents about, you know, helping to get their kids to read more, you know, what would it be?
Well, I think it was really important what Greg was saying about, you know, don't feel that you've got to pick something that you feel is, you know, terribly worthy or terribly improving. You know, any reading is what it's about. You know, you're developing those literary skills. If your kid wants to read, you know, a magazine about football or sport, or wants to read a comic, you know, wants to read a graphic novel, you know, there's some amazing graphic novels out there now. You know, it's a real massive boom area. They're brilliant. Or wants to read like a book that, you know, you consider might be a little bit young for them or a little bit old for them. You know, so don't be hung up on any of that stuff. Just try and find a variety of things and just wait and see what they want. And some, you know, there's no such thing as a reluctant reader. There's just a kid that hasn't found the right book yet. So just keep going and something will unlock it at some point.
But also, if there aren't books immediately in the vicinity, then there will be something that they enjoy watching. And that is a story, whether it, you know, it's a Marvel film or whatever it is, that is a story that was committed to paper at some point with words in it. So maybe it's as simple as taking an idea from a Marvel film and then getting them to write a review of it, or getting them to write about their favorite character or a story about the character they've seen in there. So it doesn't have to be a book. It just needs to be a story. And the idea of writing your own story will hopefully lead them to go, oh, well, I'm now writing my own story, and all these things are just great stories, and they're really fun, and they're all and whatever. And that could lead them to a book, or could just lead them to writing their own stuff. So really, it's it's as much about writing as it is about reading, because you can't have one without the other, obviously.
And really about sort of unsnobifying, you know, literature, you know, which always sounds rather grand, doesn't it? The word literature, printed matter, you know, the National Literacy Trust do.
None of us can say literacy.
None of us say literacy. It's too much about just books. Yeah.
Two authors and two journalists, and not one of us can say literacy.
The National Literacy Trust do amazing work with them, like some kids that have been excluded, and they have really good partnerships with like local football teams. You know, like Burnley are really strong on this, and they'll get the footballers that the kids, you know, really look up to, and we'll sort of partner them and get them to sort of come up with some stories together or do some reading together, and just to kind of keep drumming that message home that, you know, books and reading is not, it's not like a posh thing. It's not a middle class thing. It's not like a something you've got to be frightfully clever to do, you know, and you don't have to talk about it in a pretentious way. And it doesn't have to be frightfully improving of the mind. You know, it can just be for fun. And it's just getting those words in your head and keeping them there, because, you know, when the right words go in, they stay there for life.
My kids' school actually did something really bonkers this week. They showed, it's only a tiny little primary school. There's only 200 kids in the whole school. And they showed every single child from reception all the way up a picture of an ogre who was crying and had a great big bogey coming out of his nose. And then everyone had to write a line of a story about the ogre. And then they've put them all together and made this massive story about a snotty ogre. It's just that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, great.
That's exactly it.
And also, because that's not intimidating. Write a line of a story. It's a great way to start. Mm. You know, you don't have to go, you know, oh, how will I structure it? What's the beginning, middle of the end? What's my hero's motivation here? Just write a line. That's an absolutely great idea, because then, you know, you find, I think a lot of kids would find once they've written one line, they're like, oh, and then what happened next? And they'll know in their head what it was.
And it's great to write funny things. And if your friend reads it back and they find it funny, there's nothing better than getting a laugh from somebody, and particularly your friends. So you'll be encouraged to maybe write a bit of dialogue with them or act it out and speak it out loud. And that can just only enhance your confidence as well.
I've got a question following on that about being funny. So are y'all pretty ruthless with each other when you try something, you think it's going to be really funny in the book and it doesn't work?
We do. We try things out on each other all the time. And we will, you know, pretty quickly if someone that's at the keyboard and you just write banana llama department, which appears in The Great Dream Robbery, and Chris or I just start laughing, you go, oh, that's good. And then from banana llama, you just keep spinning off the words like that. So yeah, we're not ruthless, I don't think. We just sort of know.
Our editors are quite ruthless, aren't they?
Oh yeah, who cares about them?
We had Hannah, who edited the Kid Normal series, and that were our editor now, Carmen at Puffin. The most damning thing that either of them has ever said, I think, is when they put notes when we're doing a rewrite, doing edits on the book, and just write something like, "I'm not sure this quite lands."
Cutting.
Yeah, it's a bit like when Mary Berry says, "It's a bit dense."
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What's the other one that that Carmen uses? Have another stab at this.
Oh yeah.
Or, oh no. Our former amazing editor at Bloomsbury. Give this a bit of a mull.
Yeah. Have a mull.
Have a mull.
Yeah. Oh, you cut this.
Or are you really? It's like, do you really love this bit?
Oh yeah, that happens a lot.
Yeah. Are you absolutely wedded to this character? Yeah.
Kill them off.
Oh, that's harsh. But do you do that to each other? Do you kind of like say no, Chris? He's just not working.
I think sort of instinctively, because we worked on the radio for so long together, I think, you know, we're both very good at just telling when the other one's just, you know, depending on which one of us happens to be sort of on laptop typing duties, they just pause and like doesn't write down the idea. You're going to go, yeah, you hate that, don't you?
I was just trying to think of sometimes. So we've been trying with Super Ghost. We've been obviously, as with everything, you try and get better every time you try something. So we are getting better at doing these stories, and we're getting better at writing concisely. So some of the Kid Normal books were really quite long, and that's because we were overwriting bits and we were just kind of formulating in our own heads, I think. And then with Super Ghost, we were really, really hard on each other, just saying, let's just make it as concise as possible and just trim all the fat away. And that's really difficult to do sometimes when you're just in the middle of a flow of a great action scene or an adventure scene. You just go in, I don't know, that's too much. You don't need to describe everything that's there. So we were both nudging each other going, yeah, not, we don't need that. Just a little bit less.
Yeah.
And this is actually our shortest one. Not by that much, but we've been trying to make them a bit more concise.
It's so difficult, isn't it, to kind of, when you're in it and you think, oh, but I don't want to leave anything out of what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you're a father. You're writing children's books. Do you have veto power over things because you are the official dad?
No, I've got less filter than anyone else, I think, to be honest. I think the only line that we had to have cut on the grounds that it would be horrifying for children, which was about in one of the Kid Normal books, where we had a metaphor of like, remember Doom Weasel? And it said he looked like a scary clown that lived in a dumpster and grabbed children as they went past. It was like, you can't say that. It will frighten the kids.
That frightens the adults, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So
Have a mull on that one.
Is that, I'm not sure that metaphor about the scary clown that lives in the dumpster is quite landing. Yeah. Cut it immediately. Yeah. No, I think that was the only point where our editor actually wrote, I'm vetoing this on the grounds that it's unsuitable. So the answer to your question, Jen, is no.
But I think also a broader point about writing for kids is that we don't really try and we don't want to write down. If anything, you want to write up. And you when you don't know a word when you're reading, you should just read through it. And you can go and look it up if you need to, or just make it make sense when the rest of the sentence appears. But we deliberately don't write down, say, what would an 8-year-old like? And then just start writing, Mr. Farty Pants went to town that day, and all that kind of thing. It's not like that. You can do a story because, well, as you know, kids understand a lot of things.
A lot more than we give them credit for.
In fact, I was with my 14-year-old niece last night. I picked her up from school, and she said, I gave Bella's book to my best friend. And I was like, How to Kill Your Family for a 14-year-old.
I bet they'd love it though, wouldn't they?
Yeah. So Bella's book has obviously been quite successful this year, and it's gone round my niece's school, and they're only 14. And I was scanning the book in my head thinking, it's not really that suitable. There's a few bits, but yeah, you're right. Kids know a lot more than we do give them credit for. So there's no need to write down to them.
I guess if your kids are, or if children in general, if the bad thing they're doing is reading books that are inappropriate, that's, you know, in the scheme of things, maybe.
I would like nothing better than for any child of mine to read inappropriate books.
Yeah, that's a good bad thing.
100%. Yeah.
Greg, you recently spoke to the Times talking around the idea of kids about reframe. It's all very serious. You spoke to them about reframing the conversation around not having children.
Yes, well, it's a very serious topic. And I think that's kind of what I was getting at in that piece, which was we want to take it really seriously as a thing. And I guess we've come to the decision at the moment, which is you can have a great life with kids, you can have a great life without them, but you've got to really, really think it through and get it as right as you possibly can, and don't take it lightly, because I think a lot of people, some of my friends I think would probably admit that they rushed into it, or they just got carried away with it, and it's like, oh, that's the thing to do, you have to have a kid now, quick, have a kid. And some people aren't lucky to have them, so the question being not, oh, are you having kids, it's like, oh my god, you're having kids, that's amazing, and oh, you're not having kids, that's also amazing, and you'll have a great life as well. I think that's where our heads are at the moment, but that might change our minds weekly.
Oh God, it's horrific. It's like you're on a treadmill and you've done step one. And so my whole family was scandalized when I did step two and had the kid before I did step one. You can only imagine what great Auntie Elsie said to that.
But it shouldn't just be the automatic thing. And I do think a lot of people just go, do, married kids, for having kids, da da da. I mean, and you don't really think about it. I think my point is really think about it and really be ready for it. Make sure that you've got everything in place as much as you can. I know that you can't plan, you know, be like, we're now ready for kids, but really thinking about it is important because it's a huge responsibility. You've got to make sure that you're you're ready for it in that way, sort of mentally and financially and all those sorts of boring things. But it's okay just to go, well, you don't have to have kids. You don't have to.
And this is the man who spent a lot of time in school with a lot of kids. Maybe it's just put him off for life.
But we get to hang out with some amazing kids, and I've got some brilliant kids in my life, my niece and nephew. A lot of my mates have got kids. And at the moment, that's kind of enough. And I think that's absolutely okay to say that.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting. I think, you know, we here at the NetMoms podcast hear a lot about authors of children's books. And I think one of the first things people say is, oh, are they a mom or a dad? But in fact, we all used to be kids. So the idea that writing a children's book is something that you need to be a parent to do is quite an interesting idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I think children's authors that we met, the uniting factor is not so much that they've all got kids and they're writing for their own kids. I think the uniting factor is that they remember very vividly what it's like being a kid.
Mm.
I know that's definitely true for both of us, you know, drawing on our experiences for, you know, writing about kids going to school and stuff. You can tell that when we're having conversations about it, we're writing these scenes, we both remember very vividly that, you know, going to school feeling.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that's what, in my experience, kids authors have in common, that they just, you know, very, very vividly have this sort of really solid kind of technicolor memory of what it's like being 8, 9, 10, 11 years old.
Do you know what's interesting? We interviewed Dermot O'Leary.
Oh, someone's doing well.
Dermot.
Lovely Dermot. Yes.
Toto the Ninja Cat had just come out.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. The latest one. And he said exactly the same thing. He was saying how he can just remember really vividly bits of being a kid that were really rubbish.
Yeah.
And he wanted to write about those bits when they were good for other kids. And I think that's really lovely.
Oh, it is, yeah. But all those memories were unlocked as soon as we started writing Kid Normal. And we thought about what our school lives were like. There's a lot of both of us in Kid Normal, more than any of the other books, actually, because we've all been the outsider on the first day of school. We've all been scared of the bigger kids. We've all been scared of subjects we didn't understand. We've all been scared of PE teachers who bully you. You know, all those sorts of things. They come flooding back to you. There's a bit in Kid Normal where Murph, the main character, is dropped off at the early drop desk. That's because that happened to me because my mum dropped me early and I had to sit sort of with the receptionist, sort of sorting out all the registers or whatever in the morning. So you get a unique perspective because you see the school starting. So you see the first teachers arriving. You get to see who's late, who comes in a huff, who comes in with their umbrella, sort of faffing around. And then you see the first kids arriving. So you get to see the school from a different perspective when you do that sort of thing. So that really helped. So I think we were both probably quite good observers when we were kids and we just sort of soaked it all up. And I can remember it really well.
We went to see a secondary school. We're at that dreadful stage of viewing secondary schools. And it was just, I was just taken back the minute I walked into this secondary school. It was just like, you could just remember people spitting chewing gum and sticking under the desks and all the other stuff that went on at secondary school. I was like, oh my God, it doesn't change at all. It's exactly the same.
But don't they tart it up for the open day? We found when we went around we went around my son's secondary school and everything's spotless, and it's like it's all the absolutely amazing Dairy Lee kids who are like, hello, welcome to our wonderful school, who come and show you around. And then we went to look around the science labs, and there was a science teacher giving a demonstration, and he set a £5 note on fire and then put it out again and like did basically a magic trick with chemicals. It was like, if you come and study science here, this is what... Well, I've checked with my son now, who's now in his GCSE year.
Never done that. Well, last night they set fire to a whole string of jelly babies.
I've never been to any open day where anything was set fire. My daughter... We are obviously investigating the wrong schools.
Yeah, we were looking for a specialist fire school, obviously.
It's so interesting when the memories that get unlocked. You talking about them cleaning the school. I remember vividly they would use the floor buffer to make sure the floor was absolutely spotless.
And it smelled like polish, didn't it?
Yeah. And you would just be like, you just want to walk in there when the kids are coming around going, it's not like this normally.
It doesn't smell like this.
They are pretending. And they, do you know what you never see? The Van de Graaff generator again.
No, never. The Van de Graaff
generator always comes out on an open day and you never see that ever again. They go, put your hands on it, make your hair go up. Well, that never happened again.
No Van de Graaff is generated.
No.
No.
So it's all those sorts of things.
They were saying, oh, form time. Form time is when we have quiet reflection. And I could hear my husband behind me kind of sniggering away while we were having this tour. And I was thinking, and he literally, you know, when you get the giggles and you can't stop, and he was in pieces, and he was like, I just remember in our time, Jono Stanbridge asked us to push him on a wheelie chair, and he went straight through the wall and into the other classroom. And I was, so they're like, form time is quiet reflection. And my husband's there thinking of a kid going through the walls.
So do y'all each have little notebooks of kind of crazy memories that pop up as you're kind of brainstorming to write? That you want to use for future books that we can, any tidbits we can expect to see?
We've actually got a page of stories that we will never write, haven't we?
Oh, to see those.
I think we may have been on our way back from a literary event. We were possibly having a glass of wine on the train.
We came up with a list of book titles that we will never be able to use. Like, well, Bus Dog is one that we would love to do at some point.
Yeah, it's about a dog that drives a bus. That's as far as we got. We just thought it was a great title.
Yeah, lazy book ideas.
The Little Drummer Pig.
Yeah, there was one that was called Stop, That's Not My Grandma.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, that was quite a good one.
Which I thought we could, you know, if we completely run out of ideas, just lean back on these lazy ones.
The Crying Wine Waiter.
Yeah. The Adventures of the Fart Banana was another one.
Oh, see, I'd quite like to read of these, gents. Can you just crack a few of those out and we'll read them and see whether they're good or bad?
Yeah, sure.
No problem.
That'll be book 20.
We'll get straight on it.
Well, on that note, can I go and have a gin now, please?
Yes, you can.
You must be overdue for one. Come on.
Yeah, you're overdue a gin.
Thank you so much for spending your afternoon chatting silly things with us. It's very nice to meet you and we're very much looking forward to reading your book.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.